This is the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren 107.3 FM.
Thank you very much. It's a high of 8 degrees centigrade as far as the weather is concerned, low of 6 degrees centigrade. Cloudy but generally dry, although Katie's rightly identified it's raining outside at present. Never mind, it'll get better, it'll be dry with brighter spells and indeed light winds as the day proceeds.
I'm Gary.
I'm Matt.
I'm Rippy. And we are the Reduced Shakespeare Company. And you're listening to the Midweek Drive on Siren FM.
Marvellous, the award-winning Siren FM, of course. Almost as wonderful as the Alan Stevens creation of Radio B, which is what we refer to it in many ways. You might sort of mention it in the little trailer, etc. Now, whom from, of course, that wonderful show, which is B, asterisk, 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 Tard, or indeed, who can we actually say is going to be making a show debut at this moment, Katie Grimmison?
That would be Tracy Russell.
That would be the legendary Tracy Russell. Good morning, Tracy. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well, thank you, Alex.
Excellent.
Lovely to talk to you.
Well, it's nice to see that we actually got connected together and everything worked out splendidly, because we knew it would. So,
yes.
When you got the call from the Magic Bullets team, obviously Fiona and Alan and the rest of the other folk, etc., did you think, oh, I suppose it's a job, you know, I'll do something from that point of view? Or did you think, no, I'm going to dive into this with my usual Tracy Russell-esque quality, aplomb, and general joie de vivre?
Oh, the latter, of course.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I thought it was very exciting. Any project that Alan and Fiona and the team do is always exciting and interesting, and I'm certainly up for it. So, yes, it was great to get the call.
So let's hold it there, because Katie, I don't think, has actually heard episode 5 of the aforementioned Radio B as yet.
No, I haven't.
Tragically, we can't play the last two lines, for obvious reasons, which we won't go into at this particular stage. But, Tracy, are you ready for just a little flavour, a little smidgen of a show which, in Alan Stevens' very own words, without your particular contribution to this particular episode, there just wouldn't have been an episode, basically. Here it comes.
Yes.
Oh, hello, Zoe. And how are you today?
Fine. Thank you, Miss Hailstones.
Are you here to see Liz?
Yes, I've got an appointment.
Well, good luck.
Thank you.
Ingress.
You wanted to see me, Miss Thornton.
Hello, Zoe. Come in. Please take a seat. Call me Liz.
Thank you.
As senior manager at Radio Bastard, I've asked you here this morning to investigate the strengths and opportunities of your Connections Employment Advantage programme so far.
You mean my work experience?
Yes, that's right, Zoe. Now, do you feel you've been interfacing synergistically with the team and strategically actualised your opportunities within the news-gathering posture?
Yes.
Good. But would you say that you've successfully leveraged your networking activities with the company's high flyers?
I'm sorry?
Going forward, Zoe, let's table some progressive suggestions for improvement.
Okay.
One or two members of our team would like me to discuss with you the added value of your participation.
They would?
To provide some illustrative examples, Sandra Hailstones has queries about your proactivity regarding an investigatory narrative concerning the youth-orientated procurement of a mobile cellulose conveyancer.
Is this about the fruit and veg van story?
To put it plainly, she feels that there's a pulling gap between you and the other sled dogs, and that your presence has injected a catheter of toxicity in the office biocollective.
So she's saying she doesn't like me?
There's also the issue of presenteeism. To be specific, on a forward-looking axle of retroactive projection, your self-manifesting occupancy of the career-actualising timeplates regarding a particular period this quarter of the financial year.
Retroactive projection. Timeplates. Self-manifest. Oh, you mean when I was here last week?
Good. I'm glad we're interfacing in the same knowledge stream.
And so are we. Well, there we are. Nice little bit of presenteeism there, Katie, which is obviously very good when you have that work experience. Do you recognise this from your time with Radio Warwickshire?
What, this programme?
That kind of sort of event, really, that sort of meet the manager and suddenly you get
no,
to...
No, not really.
No, I know.
My manager is quite...
It's quite nice. Tracy, you know, was this... I mean, did you resonate with this? Because, I mean, I sense the voice of Alan Stevens really sharing his whole experience himself in a somewhat challenging work experience environment when we were talking about this.
Yes, well, I think there's a lot of jargon in the workplace these days, isn't there? And a lot of very fancy words. to describe what is really quite simple and ordinary.
If you wish to engage in blue sky thinking or actually run it up a flagpole and see how many people stand up and salute, feel free to do so, my girl. Yeah,
it's very cliché-ridden these days, isn't it, the world?
And the notion of catheters of toxicity, surely that sort of opens up a whole range of factors there.
Oh, I would have thought so, yes, absolutely.
Share with us what we were listening to there, Tracy, and where your character was going and all the rest of the bits and pieces.
Yes, well, I think, she certainly is suffering from verbal diarrhea, wasn't she? Mm. I think she's a character that, I think in order to project an air of authority and an air of being in command, she disguises her hidden insecurities with a lot of words, I think. I think that's fair to say with a lot of people who occupy places of authority.
You see, once again, proving, Katie, that we have an actress extraordinaire here. You know, Tracy is coming across as just a wonderful individual. We were a bit scared. We thought, are they going to... Because sometimes the acting folk go so into the method that they actually become... they become that person. It's like, you know, Stanislavski and Strasbourg put together. You think, whoa, where are we going with this particular thing? But clearly, you are nothing like your character, are you, Tracy?
Oh, I hope not. I hope I'm not quite as jargon-laden as that character in particular.
As I say, in terms of that, you can download this from caldorcity.com. It's an interesting way in terms of how the whole saga is being released every Wednesday. Episodes developed. I think we work through that. How have you found the series as a whole, Tracy, in terms of... have you had a chance to listen to the whole thing? Or is it a case of, no, I only got to hear my bits, and then after that I had to sort of sign a confidentiality agreement?
No, nothing like that. I haven't quite listened to all of it as a whole, because of travelling quite a lot and being here and there. So I'm going to listen to it all in one sort of stream, I think.
I see. Careful, Tracy. I mean, that sort of mainlining with the kind of Calvin City quality, you don't know what could happen. You know?
Well, exactly right, yes.
I've personally taken it at biteable chunks all the way from that sort of line of things. It's very, very, very critical. And what about radio? The scenery is so much better, I always find, and it's the theatre of the mind. Is it something which you enjoy doing, or is it a case of, well, you know, you've got to do something between the calls from Hollywood?
Oh, well, I really enjoy doing radio. I like the fact that you can listen to somebody and follow a story, and it can be any kind of a story, set in any time or place, and your mind can wander. I mean, like reading a book, really. I think they're quite similar in that way, in that they allow the person participating to be more active in creating the world than perhaps being spoon-fed by watching, you know, something with visuals as well. Everyone's own experience will be different, I think.
Well, exactly. Katie, questions from yourself.
What have you got planned?
Yes, what have you got planned, Tracy? What do you want to know?
Planned?
What have you got planned?
Well, what I tend to do a lot of at the moment is a time travel in another way, really. I tend to be found a great deal in old buildings. Old historic houses and the like.
Is this where you just pop up as a sort of surprise guest or something?
Yeah, sometimes I do. Yes, I think I take people by surprise. But quite often I'm working at Hampton Court and Tower of London and other English heritage sites and the like, in character, bringing the past to life, I think is the way we like to put it.
You see, Tracy, I remember the days of the movie Museum of the Moving Image on the South Bank.
Oh, yes.
And I often think these guys were doing wonderful. They were absolutely genius. They were back in the days of revolutionary Russia, and they were having cinematic things, etc. And then I realised, good grief, they're only on equity minimum. You know, I think it's outrageous. You know, I mean, yes. It's ramp up the whole sort of system, etc. Because it's a wonderful way of, I mean, it's kind of street theatre, but it's also a bit like improvisation with your archetypal hyper-professional murder mysteries, really. So you've got all sorts of things there.
That's right, yes, you can explore all kinds of stories and you can really get into it, yes, and it is improvising, and you're also making your public part of the action as well. So it's not just a case of, there you are, sounding off in character, you've got them as part of it, they're part of the court. They might be visitors, but they are also playing an active role. So that's rather good, and you place them in that role, and they're usually quite happy to to play along with you, which is good.
I'm already noting a possibility for a series here called Tracy Russell Sounding Off. TRSSO, basically.
That's good.
I'll look forward to the call. It's important for them. Of course, there always is that moment when you're dealing with Joe and Josephine Q Public where you think, they're just not going to engage at all, really. Basically, I might as well just be a rubber duck. You know, they just don't like it. They're just shying away.
Oh, yes. If you see people, yes, people have got to have a bit of a twinkle about them. Otherwise, it's no good
pointless.
At all. And you don't want to put anyone on the spot and embarrass them.
Well, that's a no-no, I think. Exactly. Yeah. Otherwise, you've got the legal writs. You've got all sorts of research. It's not the...
Yes.
But, of course, the flip side is, you know, inevitably, the people who believe that they are God's gift to the X Factor and they should actually have your role as well.
Well, that's true.
how do you cope with that? Is it a case of just a swift kind of non-verbal communication to say, oi, off with you?
Well, yes, you can just move the scene along a bit, I think, yes, and let them down gently. Usually no one gets so carried away that they spoil things. You sometimes get some screaming children in the background. But apart from that, you know, it's usually okay.
So, guys, share with us, what roles have you actually done in these wonderful street theatre exhibitions? Where can we see you? I mean, I feel as though we should have a midweek drive trip down just to say, look, it's Tracy Russell, everybody. What do you think, Katie?
I think that would be a very good idea.
I think so. We're already, exactly. So, what are you actually doing with those?
I'm at Dover Castle for a few weekends coming up. The run-up to Christmas and during Christmas week. I'm Eleanor of Aquitaine.
Very good.
Which is rather nice. So that's sort of that's 12th century stuff, whereas last month I was Elizabeth I at Hampton Court, would you believe? So I sort of move around a bit. And actually this weekend I'm going to be a Victorian cook at Audley End.
A Victorian cook at Audley End.
Yeah, so I sort of move up and down a bit. here and there. So there we are.
Just wonderful setup from that point of view. We're going to talk about a whole range of other sort of things as well as the thing proceeds. But it is, of course, Black Friday tomorrow. We'll be speaking to TV's Miss Moneypenny, who's joining us in a few moments. She's written... Mrs. Moneypenny, of course, has actually written a weekly column for the Financial Times for 13 years, entertaining readers from Seattle to Shanghai, Singapore and Sydney, plus plenty of places in between. So Mrs. Moneypenny up next on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. But, Tracy, we have two critical questions for your good self. Not sure whether Alan Stevens is listening. He probably will to the podcast. He's probably just psyching himself up for joining us around about 22:10 this morning. But have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on this, your Midweek Drive Morning Edition debut?
I really have. I really enjoyed it. It's been lovely talking to you.
So the next critical question is, can we look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future and keeping us updated of your historical persona and incarnations, plus your acting work and a whole heap of others? Will you return, Tracy?
Oh, I'm sure I'll return with great joy. Thank you. Yeah, it'll be lovely.
A round of applause for Tracy Russell, please. Yay! Tom Hark. The piranhas. Don't worry, they won't bite. Well, as long as they're out of water. Ed, I would have thought you would have actually just said, I'll fill, because I've actually got all the details about the UK retailer gearing up for the busiest shopping day of the year so far. But no, you left the studio saying I've got to fill with something completely different, whilst I attempt, Katie, and dear listener, to actually dial up the ISDN folk to actually go live with Mrs. Moneypenny. Don't mention the other name, Ed. It is Mrs. Moneypenny. It's all important. Katie's had lots of telephone conversations and negotiations this morning. We do not mention any other name other than Mrs. Moneypenny and possibly from Asda, Ayers Alam, although obviously other supermarkets and hypermarkets are available. But it's Mrs. Moneypenny, Ed. Is that clear?
Absolutely.
Thank the Lord for that. Because we could be having all sorts of other challenges on that setup. Anyway... Why a bit tardy this morning?
Well, I'm going to apologise for my lateness, which was partly down to the bucket of coffee I drank last night after the show, and then a homemade cheese sauce, which had a bit too much corn flour in. And it just didn't lie on the stomach very well. So it took a while to get to sleep, and then it took a while to wake up. And so I overslept. I get that off my chest. I'm honest about it. I am sorry. And I am now here. But on my way down today, I decided, as I left the house at 8:20, that it wasn't worth driving, obviously, because it's helicopter time in Lincoln. I walked through Castle Square, and on St. Mary Magdalene's Church, there is an enormous wreath, an Advent wreath, with all flashing lights, which took me by surprise, because I wasn't really expecting it to be on a church. But the reason it is there, it signifies what's happening inside between the 30th of November, which, of course, is this Saturday, and it lasts all the way up to the 15th of December. It's called the Cathedral Quarter Advent Wreath Festival, and the church is filled with wreaths, circular bits of foliage from Christmas trees and holly. Aww. And so forth. And all of the businesses and representatives of charities and other organisations in the Uphill Cathedral Quarter, as they call it, sponsor one of these. And they showcase their work. And it's in the church. The church is absolutely full of twinkling lights and foliage, for want of a better word. It's absolutely beautiful. It's been going for several years now. It's open 12 o'clock midday through till 6 o'clock tea time. That's during the Christmas market and at the rest of the times, as I say, between this Saturday, the 30th of November, and the 15th of December. It's open between 2 and 4 in the afternoon. And the church also told me, I was chatting to their church organist, who was just opening up the door as I came past this morning, and he said, oh, do tell everybody that we have our Christmas carol service on the Sunday before Christmas in the evening, and they've got a fabulous choir there as well. So what do you think? Aw,
sounds really nice.
The wonderful things about ISDNs in certain studios is you can dial the number as many times as you wish and it still gives you diddly squat. So, no, never mind. You know, we'll obviously have to sort of look to develop something completely different. We will be with Mrs. Moneypenny, TV's Mrs. Moneypenny, as the whole thing proceeds. But I think we'll sort of just ease through that neatly with a little hint, a little touch of Rick Okasek, Emotion in Motion, on Siren 107.3 FM. Oh, will that be the siren that's the East Midlands radio station of the year, Ed?
Go on, it is. I think it is,
yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks to the Radio Academy. And so Rick Okasek heads away, and we can hopefully, all being well, say we've gone back to the old traditional landline as opposed to... it's something obviously about 1A that just doesn't quite... 1B, oh, wait, we never have this challenge. Never mind, enough of such stuff. Perhaps it's all down to Black Friday. We're delighted to be able to welcome TV's very own Mrs. Moneypenny. Yes, indeed, from Seattle to Shanghai, Singapore and Sydney, plus all places in between. Mrs. Moneypenny, former investment banker, and indeed with an MBA from the London Business School, a PhD from the University of Hong Kong, a true legend. Mrs. Moneypenny, good morning. How are you?
I'm very well and very, very pleased to be on your show.
And we're delighted to have you with us. Of course, with the even more interesting, if such a thing is possible, Ayaz Alam from ASDA.
Marvelous. Good morning.
Good to hear you as well, Ayaz. And there's no sort of suggestion that the supermarket chain have to employ people that actually have the same sort of name as in terms of initials, but it does work well. Ayaz Alam.
And by the way, he's very handsome.
Yeah, well, this is Moneypenny, clearly. Don't go there this time of the day, please. You know, let's move on. So let's start off with the whole thing in terms of the listener who might not be aware about Black Friday in the first place. It may well be, you know, possibly the busiest shopping day of the year so far, but you know, why this Black Friday importation from the United States?
So in America today is a public holiday. It's Thanksgiving. And yep. Because it's so close to the weekend, lots of people take tomorrow off work as well. Mm. So for years now, decades, the shops have used tomorrow, and in fact some of them even tonight, as the opportunity to have a massive sale. And people, you know, queue up and fight each other for the bargains. Ayaz is a much better place to tell you about this than me, but, you know, ASDA is wholly owned by Walmart, and they've brought this to the UK.
And indeed, we've got a whole range of deals, including deals on plasma TVs, LED TVs, Blu-ray players, Samsung smartphones, little tykes, cosy coupes, and indeed play kitchens. So it's great stuff from that point of view. Is it very much a case of this is pioneering stuff? I mean, we'll come to you. We'll stay with you if that's all right, Mrs. Moneypenny, to actually talk through this. You know, retail therapy, is it all green shoots of recovery? Is this essentially a good news story?
Well, we have got the green shoots of recovery, of course. I mean, we really have now got a sustained recovery in the UK. We've had more than two consecutive quarters of positive GDP growth, which for all of those economists out there, you'll know that that's the definition of a recovery. And we are seeing that. But I think what's more interesting is that, you know, people aren't waiting until after Christmas to have these opportunities to, you know, to really bring bargains to the shoppers. People realise that now people are getting ready for Christmas. This is a great opportunity to offer people bargains ahead of Christmas.
We have Ed Wellman in the studio, who's been perusing the information, etc. Ed, questions for Mrs. Moneypenny.
Indeed. Good morning to you, Mrs. Moneypenny.
No, good morning, Ed.
Now, I'm interested, is this
people visiting shops actual buildings, or does this include online spending?
I was going to have to answer the online bit for you, but I can tell you that the main bit will be people visiting shops, because Asda's opening its doors at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning for this sale. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, before that time, you can't buy any of it online.
Okay.
From our point of view, we made a decision to put this in stores only because, firstly, we want our customers to experience Black Friday the way we want them to, i.e. the excitement, the fun and the enjoyment of that experience. There's also the element of we want customers to be able to pick up this product, touch it, feel it, and see the quality of the product that we're actually selling, because at the prices that we're looking to sell this merchandise for, we want customers to be able to pick it up and feel it and actually feel as though they're getting a fantastic bargain.
And presumably the date that you've picked for this is quite important to you, isn't it? Because it, I would imagine around about this time is the last payday that many people get before Christmas.
Yeah, absolutely. Month end in retail world is a really important time for us. But as we're owned by Walmart, as Mrs. Moneypenny said, this is exactly the same day in the US that the US will be launching this sale. So we're aligned with our parent company.
Katie Grimerson, any thoughts from yourself about this Black Friday scenario?
Yeah, what's the most popular product? What people seem to be buying the most?
Yeah, I asked, what is the in thing in which you sort of thinking, oh yes, well, we'd sell an awful lot of those. Is it plasma TV?
You mentioned plasma TVs. TVs generally are going to do well, and our customers will always want to find a great deal on TVs. But actually, the must-have products this year are smartphones and tablets, and we're really pleased to say that we've got some stunning deals on that. And the one product that we can tell you the price for is we've got a 7-inch tablet at £49, which we know is going to be something that our customers are going to get after in swathes.
As Katie's jaw has literally dropped. It is quite literally a jaw-dropping deal. It's official. There we are. Amazing. Mrs. Moneypenny, back to your good self. I love the description of your style as being provocative, hilarious and wise. Which
I know. It's great publicity, isn't it?
Well, this is what Super Scrimpers is all about. I mean, in terms of saving and working through that whole process, and we're looking forward, hopefully, to a fourth and a fifth series of Super Scrimpers, these can only be good news when retailers actually sort of engage with this and hopefully sort of provide, you know, good deals for customers.
It is, and I don't think it's been a bad thing that, you know, Super Scrimpers went to air for the first time in the spring of 2011, and it was very much a child of the recession. It was to get everybody focused on, you know, how could they live more cheaply? Because we'd been through years of the good times, and then people were having to think about this in a very serious way. So, even though we do it in a light-hearted manner, it's a serious message. And it's interesting, my Christmas special is coming up soon, and you know, we encourage people at Christmas, go back into your larders and see all of the things that you have to in there before going out and buying a whole pile more food. You'd be amazed. We did a check on someone's larder, just a normal member of the public, and they had nearly £1,000 worth of food in their larder, you know, before going to the shop. So I think it's a really, you know, it's a time of the year when people spend a lot of money without thinking about it. I mean, one of the things I tell everybody about Christmas is plan your Christmas presents and price them on the internet before you go shopping. And even with this sale, big sale tomorrow at Asda, they will put the prices on the internet tonight so that you can see what you're going to get and know how much it's going to cost before you, you know, force your way through the door at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning.
And as you mentioned, the event actually launches in-store in Asda with deals available all weekend. But you have to say other supermarkets are available, but it's an interesting line. Clearly with the Walmart thing is there. Just a final sort of fact to this particular routine. Last year, more than 1.8 million towels were sold. Always good with a towel, as Douglas Adams once used to say. 1.3 million televisions, 1.3 million dolls, and 250,000 bicycles, amongst other deals. So astounding stuff there. This is Moneypenny. You've already talked about Super Scrimpers, which is fantastic stuff from that point of view. We've got two critical final questions to throw to you there before we go off to food critic James Ramsden, who's stepping into William Sitwell's piece.
If James is there, James, you've got to watch me on Come Dine With Me. You know, you've got to see my cooking.
Well, I think we've already teased ahead to that whole thing. We're putting to James a little challenge with William Sitwell, who would have been with us, but he's actually in Ethiopia this week. It's all very global, but it's all right now. But Mrs. Moneypenny, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic debut with us on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition today?
I have. I've had a lovely time. I have to say that you make me feel really, really welcome, which is a great way to start my day as well.
Well, that's because you're a lovely person. So there we are. And work through that. And what about yourself, Ayers? Has it been good for you?
Well, I'm in the company of greatness here in the studio. So I'm just privileged to be here.
It was wonderful. So, final question, this is Money Penny. Can we look forward to hopefully welcoming you again in the not-too-distant future and connecting with you on the show?
Well, I would be welcome to... I would welcome offers to come back on the show anytime to talk about anything. And also, by the way, I love Lincolnshire. So an in-person in the studio... I'll be right up for
A round of applause for Mrs. Money Penny, please. Nice. Yay! Excellent!
Lincoln Inspired is more than just an arts festival, more than a literary festival, more than a whole set of lifestyle opportunities, and more than what the world has needed for a millennia. To see just how much more Lincoln Inspired can make you, go to lincolninspired.co.uk and explore the inspiration.
Now, regular listeners will be aware that obviously our main culinary expert, William Sitwell, is off to Ethiopia this week. Well, that doesn't stop us because we've got a more than adequate super substitution, a true impact substitution, more than that. Guardian food writer extraordinaire, supper club proprietor of tremendous ability and skills, etc. And he's from Ripon, North Yorkshire. It's the fabulous James Ramsden. How are you, James?
I'm very well. Morning.
Good to connect with your good self. Now, one of the fascinating rationales for you being here is food trends of next year, food trends of 2014. And it seems as though the burger is beginning to be dropped from our general favourites, the flexitarian is rising, and consumer creators are also coming through into this whole system. Is this something which you're particularly surprised about, or is it a case of, good heavens, who would have ever thought that there'd be an increase of over 17.8% in the UK sandwich market?
Well, I suppose the sandwich is always been there, but it's interesting to see people eating more sandwiches, and I think this is a way of us sort of looking to make our lunchtimes a bit more lively, a bit more exciting. We get bored of the same things every day, and it's just interesting to have a look around. I mean, I've interviewed several sort of people who lead the charge when it comes to food trends and knowing what's happening. And they all seem to agree on several factors, in terms of things like foraging, in terms of superfoods, in terms of us eating less meat. I mean, you mentioned burgers there, and I think burgers are like denim, and we're always going to want burgers. But there seems to be a shift towards a bit more variety and a bit more excitement in our daily eating.
It's fascinating to find out that this report was carried out alongside a task force of the UK's hottest food experts. I wasn't even aware that a food futurologist was an occupation that you could actually go for. But food futurology was indeed what Morgan Gay and indeed obviously street food maverick Petra Ban were involved with from that point of view, as well as obviously Michelin-starred chef Tom Sellers. Street food, that seems to be getting much more in vogue recently. I mean, I was always told as a young man, don't eat your food whilst you're walking along. It's not good, but it seems to be opening up a whole new area.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you mentioned your regular contributor, William Sitwell, who I know is not a big fan of the street food because he ends up...
His campaigns are legendary. He also wants to campaign against Morris dancing, James. Just don't get him started. That's all I say.
It goes for all the fun things in life. But no, street food is huge. It has been for a couple of years, but it's getting bigger and bigger. Instead of going out to your sort of boring normal sandwich chains for lunch, to go and find a van in the street serving a delicious burrito or some sort of Scandinavian open sandwich, it just livens up your lunch.
It's particularly interested in the notion that economy eating can not necessarily mean just settling for bread and cheese. You can actually sort of have some gastronomic delights without necessarily busting your budget.
Absolutely. I mean, there's this great food blogger and writer called Jack Munro who writes a blog called A Girl Called Jack, and she's really leading the way in terms of showing us that we can eat really well. But on a budget, with exciting food, as opposed to just the boring old staples.
Flexitarians. We talked about this on our breakfast show this morning with Jeff and Ian, and obviously it's the word of the day in many ways, etc. Obviously, I've come across breatharians, who believe you can exist solely on fresh air, fruitarians, vegetarians, but flexitarians, that's a nice one.
Yes, well, I mean, I suppose when Warburton's commissioned this report, they wanted to have a look at the sort of fillings we're going for, and we're so used to just bunging a bit of ham and cheese in a sandwich, but we're eating less meat. There's for many reasons. There's the sort of economical reasons that meat is expensive. There's the ecological reasons, and of course our health. You know, eating less meat is good for us, although we do need a bit of a bit of protein every now and again, don't we?
Well, I'm going to sort of sit on the fence firmly for that one, James. You know, some of our vegetarian listeners can be quite ferocious in their responses. Only kidding. Secret spaces. I've heard of flash mobs, but from this particular point of view, secret supper clubs and pop-up restaurants.
Yeah, I mean, the sort of underground eating thing is as it gets more popular, I suppose, become less underground. But supper clubs, which are essentially restaurants in people's homes, have been going for a few years. And I think next year that sort of movement looks like it might go slightly more micro, and home cooks might be sort of cooking dinner, posting it online, what they're sort of offering, and your neighbours can pop round and pick up a couple of portions. There's this great new website called Cookisto, which started in Greece, and that enables people to, and they have to get all their health and safety checks before all your listeners start phoning in, but then they can say, look, tonight I'm doing chicken curry for me and my husband, and we'll make four portions, and if you'd like a couple of portions, pop round, give us a fiver or whatever. And I think that's a really lovely way of sort of keeping home cooking at home, but also diffusing it into the neighbourhood, which is really a lovely thing.
We'll be heading off shortly to one of our regular Los Angeles correspondents, Phil Leonis. And in terms of international street food domination, I see it's not New York, it's certainly not Los Angeles, it's Vietnamese, Mexican and Lebanese world foods that actually are the main parts of street food markets.
Seem to be, yeah. I'm not entirely sure why that is. I think it's probably because they tend to be quite portable. Those cuisines have already sort of have very much a root in the street, and also they come with a lot of spice and zip and sort of citrus, and that's what you need at lunchtime, isn't it? It's just something to sort of wake you up and keep you going through the afternoon.
I can tell that our Food for Thought team of Charlotte and Sam will be very impressed with the notion of foraging we mentioned earlier, and that as well as traditional fruits such as gooseberry and mushrooms and so on. No, be careful that they're actually not poisonous. That's the important thing. Always advise that. But truffles seem to be increasing in growth.
This is a curious one. I mean, they certainly are, and you can get more and more things like decent truffle oil, truffle salt, of which I'm a huge fan, and other truffle-infused things in the supermarket now, which is great because truffles have always been seen as this elitist thing, because if you get them in season and they're sort of from Alba in Italy, then they're frighteningly expensive. But there is a lot you can do with them that's slightly more frugal, and there's a flavour that is a incredibly unique and wonderful and sort of almost elusive flavour to the truffle. So it'd be really exciting to see that in 2014 being more of a feature.
So one of our regular co-presenters based in Gibraltar, always sort of keen to obviously maintain her British connections and so on. Thank you, Gabriella Peralta. But in terms of the next big national food, this for me was the kind of the number one, even though it was listed number 10 in terms of the list of various other things, the continued rise in the single choice menu and the strong ingredient within that trend mix is going to be what, James?
It's going to be chicken.
Amazing. It tastes like it, doesn't it? Just tastes like chicken.
But like everything else.
Yeah.
But this is wonderful. I mean, chicken has so long been seen as the boring thing to order in a restaurant. Quite why, I don't know. Probably because restaurants were buying cheap chicken. But now restaurants are opening serving only chicken, and not just sort of fried chicken shops, but there are restaurants doing just roast chicken. And I think this is great to see, because I love a chicken. I think it would be my final meal would be roast chicken, and it's good to see restaurants doing it well.
Which is wonderful. And I must ask you, almost going to the end now, unplanned vegetarianism. Is that like an unplanned pregnancy? It just happens. What happens here? Unbelievable. Oh, no, I've become a vegetarian overnight.
Well, it's sort of when you get to the end of the day and think, do you know what, I haven't eaten any meat today, and it makes you feel good. And I think, you know, it goes back to this flexitarianism thing, and Paul McCartney, was it this year or last year, did his meat-free Mondays.
Indeed.
And once again, it's just this sort of shift away from just thinking it's not a meal. You know, rather like in Ireland, they say if it doesn't have potato, then it's not a meal. Mm. You know, I think we tend to think if it doesn't have a bit of meat on it, then it's not a proper meal. But we're slowly getting our heads around the idea that you can eat something delicious and fulfilling and filling that doesn't have a bit of cow in it.
James, it's been fantastic just sharing some thoughts on this fascinating survey, Food Trends for 2014, as you mentioned, in collaboration with War Buttons. I won't mention anything about nothing taken out, because I have to phrase it grammatically correctly, because I don't think, you know, nothing is supposed to nout. Oh, what the hey? We start off with Yorkshire, we'll work through that. Two final questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic debut on the Midweek Drive?
It's been an absolute pleasure.
So the next critical question is, can we look forward to hopefully featuring you again, not just when William's actually in Ethiopia, and maybe getting the two of you together on the show? I mean, That could be a meeting of giants in every sense of the word.
I would love nothing more than to lock horns with Mr. Sitwell.
Oh, there we are. James Ramsden, Guardian food writer extraordinaire and supper club proprietor. Many thanks indeed.
Thank you.
James Ramsden locking horns with William Sitwell with Mrs. Moneypenny as the prize. That's the kind of thing you get on the award-winning East Midlands Station of the Year.
Alan Stevens, the man behind CaldorCity.com, Magic Bullet Productions and Aisha and Zukov, now at last has his own station ident. It'll take just that teeny bit longer for Fiona Moore.
Of course, Katie, you might think, as he was the writer and producer and wonderful person behind Magic Bullet Productions, responsible for Tracy Russell, he might have actually been tuned in to meet Tracy. But no, he's in bed. Anyway, good morning, Alan Stevens. How are you? We have already given ample publicity to Radio B, so we're going to ease away from that for today, because obviously for the remaining few moments of the show, etc., we have got that event which Ed Wellman has given several years of his life to, although it only seems like a couple of shows. Yes, the Doctor Who event. Is that right, Ed? And yes. I know the sort of work that you've done with, as we refer to them, Whovians, even though Alan doesn't like that term, even though it was used in the Culture Show, and I still think is acceptable. You were working with some young Who fans who were, well, in fact, they were at Excel, they did all the rest of the bits and pieces, and, well...
This is right. They produced an excellent programme that was an hour and a half long in the end of the Doctors, the enemies, the companions. They spoke to... Yes. Richard Franklin.
They spoke to Richard
Franklin. They spoke to Alex Levchuk.
Good heavens. Yeah.
They spoke
Graham
to
Harper.
Graham Harper.
Yeah.
And they spoke to the goodly people of Lincoln to get their opinions
goodly
of
people
it as
of Lincoln.
Well. Yeah. And I gather we've got somebody called Paul McGann coming to Lincoln, to the Ritz, in December. So we're going to try and see if we can engineer some
sort of... with the Eighth Doctor.
Paul McGann?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, oh my God!
Somebody fan her. Fan
he was
her.
He was the Eighth Doctor, Katie, as well as being in a thing called With Nail and I.
Was he in the upper hand?
The upper hand.
Yeah.
There we are then. So as you can tell, Alan, lots of exciting times were had here. But Ed, did you see the Day of the Doctor?
No, I had a very good reason not to, but I didn't.
Right.
What's a very good reason?
I can't remember now, but there was a very good...
Singing
I think
in a choir
I was maybe...
In
was I in Essex this weekend? I was playing in a concert in Chelmsford Cathedral celebrating the centenary of Benjamin Britten. That's my excuse.
All right. So you didn't bother setting your DVD player on?
Well, no, but I did speak to people who'd seen it on television and gone to the cinema to watch.
And, like Alan.
You know, I'm inspired to maybe do the same.
iPlayer.
Is it there?
Yeah.
Until next week.
Yeah. I have seen it on iPlayer and watched it on that solar format. And it seems I've only heard so far just one soul from the No Adults Allowed team yesterday. I actually said, I thought it was nothing. It was really disappointing. I saw just, you know, where they opened the door, and that was it, really. Everybody, including, from an email he sent me, Alan and Fiona. Birthday treat for Fiona, because Fiona Moore, of course, celebrated her birthday on November 23rd. The anniversary of Doctor Who's first ever episode. So great times were had by all. Now you've had time to reflect on the whole process, Alan, do you feel, yes, this is it, it's finally happened, everybody's got their mojo back, celebrate and rejoice?
No, I've changed my mind, I hate it.
There you go.
No, I'm joking. No, I thought it was excellent. Look, Fiona and I went and saw it in a 3D cinema in Staines, where there were lots of people turning up, women turning up in dresses as David Tennant, which was a bit disturbing. But,
whatever floats their boat, Alan, you know?
Sorry?
Whatever floats their boat.
Yeah, well, yeah. It looked quite nice. Am I starting to fancy David Tennant, or is it just, I don't know, I was confused, you see. But no, it was excellent. I mean, I'm not a big fan of David Tennant, you know, but actually David Tennant was very, very good in it. Like, particularly like John Hurt and pointing at various things, like saying to them, you know, why can't you talk like adults? You know, what is wrong with you? You know, and are you suffering a midlife crisis? You know, all these things have been going through my head when watching New Who. So it was very nice to have it actually articulated in the story. And the story made sense, and the acting was very good, and the effects were very good, and there was a nice moral dilemma there, and the music wasn't as bombastic as it sometimes can be, and the blubbing into your hanky wasn't as overdone as it sometimes can be. And no, I mean, to be honest, if Stephen Moffat had screwed this one up, then he might as well just, you know, took a revolver and a bottle of whiskey and shut himself in a room somewhere. So he had to make this one work, and he did. So
Ed felt exactly the same about his Doctor Who production duties, I believe, really. But that was before you considered screwing the whole thing up. It was more a case of having to cope with the actual talent you were working with.
Yeah, it's just a little bit of pressure does us all good, I think.
There we are.
Well, I think so. I mean, it is true, and I think also, I mean, originally Christopher Eccleston was to be in it, and I've been told a documentary or a little documentary on it, and John Hurt was took in at the last minute. But clearly they, you know, John Hurt is such a good actor, he can inhabit any role as if it is his role, and I think they also changed a few lines. And I don't know, I mean, I as you know, I was a big fan of Chris Eccleston, was a bit, you know, sad that he left the show, and thought he was certainly the best Doctor they had for many years. But John Hurt was really, really very, very good, and you know, I'm sorely pressed to say I wish Eccleston had still been in it and not John Hurt, because, you know, he was funny, and he was kind of, you know, he had a kind of sadness there, and he articulated a number of opinions that I'd felt. Perhaps I'm getting old as well, but no, I you know, it was extremely good, and the ratings, although you should never judge quality by ratings, I'm now going to say this, 10.2 was on the day ratings, and that probably means it's probably going to get probably between 13 or 14 million, you know, when they've done the entire, it takes them 8
and the simulcast, of course.
Yeah, and also there was the cinema thing. Apparently, there's a 500,000 people went along, didn't they? They made about 6 million pounds of that. Yeah. So,
it has become a cash cow.
Well, it's always been a cash cow, isn't it? It was only when Michael Gray was stupid enough to kill the cow.
Kill the cow, but not the caretaker. Wasn't it nice to see the caretaker in there? A little nod in the direction of Star Trek Voyager, I found, actually, but perhaps not. No.
Well, it probably was, actually, yeah. I mean, I'm not a big fan of Star Trek, but I know that Stephen Moffat is a huge fan of Star Trek, and so there probably was a reference there. So better explain that to me, because I can put... Fiona, don't send an article yet! How does the caretaker fit into it? What is it? What was the Star Trek connection?
In the pilot and opening episode of Star Trek Voyager, the Ocampa are being actually looked after by a character called the Caretaker, who is responsible ultimately for stranding Janeway and company in the Delta Quadrant. So it's a loose connection, it's very tenuous, but it's nice to see that the same words work out.
I remember the pilot episode of... you're going back here, isn't it? The Star Trek Next Generation.
Yes.
When
Encounter, you know, at Farpoint.
A very old Dr. McCoy turned up. What was the context of that?
He was Admiral McCoy, and he was basically giving the new Enterprise D a send off.
Yeah. So there could have been an element of it is a bit tenuous, but. He's a Star Trek fan, I know that. He loves Next Generation and all that.
He has to have some good points. Our very own Nick from No Adults Allowed, and a new music producer. Nick was also very much a fan of this particular thing, and indeed is trying to set up a campaign to get a mini-series just featuring John Hurt as the Doctor.
Well,
kind of spin-off.
John Hurt was very good.
Oh, there we are.
Yeah. So who was the guy who criticised it? What did he say? What didn't he like about it?
It was quite, and yeah, I mean, I was literally just, I overheard it in the discussions yesterday where we had Nick, we had Sharon Alexander, and one other soul whose name actually eludes me, I have to say, because I was too busy planning for the programme last night. But he was quite
Jess.
Down.
It was Jess.
Well, no, and he was very down on the whole thing. So there we are. Jess, he was very disappointed. He feels he's been up for the hype. But then talk about hype. Katie, you haven't seen it, and yet you were so sick of it.
I was an Indian meal when it was on the telly.
Despite the fact that it had been
having a right feast.
Having a right
sit in Erdington or in Lincoln.
She was in an Indian meal. What does that mean?
I can't think
meal.
Where it was now.
She
was in Baldmere.
Yes, she was participating as opposed to literally in the meal. I don't think Katie goes in for self-cannibalism as yet. But you never know. Very strange.
You start with a feet, apparently.
Well, always
sort of Stephen King, if you were to eat yourself, you know, you would start with the feet. He worked that out, apparently, a few years back. As you think, you know,
that,
I imagine him.
Yes,
I do. I was going to eat myself. I can't eat my hands. Don't wear your hands first. I can't pick anything up, can I? But I'll stop on the feet, so I won't go anywhere anyway.
Well, what about the way of actually following the James Ramsden piece in terms of
cannibalism? Yeah,
exactly. You know, emergent ingredients and.
Oh, by the way, instead of Hoovian, I prefer hooligan.
Well, actually, they would be very apt given our very own little Siren FM team. I would have thought in many ways. No names, but there we are.
And also, I noticed when you opened up you said, you know, the award-winning, in a very sinister way. Power has obviously corrupted you now. You know, you get a bit of praise from some source, and suddenly,
The fact that Siren FM is East Midlands Radio Station of the Year, according to the Radio Academy. You know,
we need to make quite sure our listener knows that.
Exactly.
Yeah. We need to make sure that.
I think she does now.
Well, yeah,
that's
good.
That's very important, exactly. Katie, any questions you want to put to Alan Stevens about life and the universe and indeed
Indian
matters
meals.
To do with Doctor Who?
Don't think
meals.
So. No.
Because, I mean, has the calendar for 2014 been revealed in the Grimmison household, which features Alan, of course, and Fiona?
Yeah, it has. Yeah.
Did they comment on the fact that Alan and Fiona are sort of in that opening sort of thing? They're in twice, actually. They're on the back of the calendar, then the front of the calendar.
Yeah, when am I going to get my calendar?
It'll happen sooner or later.
You were saying recently, you know, only people who are actually involved with the station are going to go. I thought, well, am I involved?
Ed, I mean, did your parents sort of think, oh, what, who's that person hiding behind you, Ed?
Well, I think that they're very grateful now that they know that I have actually been doing something with my life for the last 15 months.
I think they
weren't quite sure where I was going every day, but
well,
they now know that I'm doing something.
I've met Ed.
Yes,
this
you have
true,
met Ed,
yes.
And you've met Katie. You've met them both at Sci-Fi London. We had a meal together. Katie tried to eat her feet, if you recall.
But you know. Indian.
And it took a very long time for the drinks to arrive on a hot day.
Yeah.
Katie wore a striped top, didn't she?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, I remember now.
You should see what she's wearing today. It involves sheep.
Whole sheep.
Well, it's the rurals. It's the sticks, Alan. We wouldn't appreciate you, like you boys from Staines, to appreciate that, or indeed Gloucestershire.
I come from the forest of Dean, I forget, so I know sheep.
I don't think we want we do want to go there in any way, shape, or form. Let's get a little plug out for CaldorCity.com and, of course, the aforementioned Radio B. We plugged it earlier.
And also the fact that for
Faction Paradox.
Special offer on for Faction Paradox. You try saying that after 6 pints. In fact, that's what I'm doing now. For half price, it ends tomorrow, so if you miss out, then tough.
There we have it, you see. Half price, Faction Paradox.
Yeah.
It's been a blast. Much of the thing was, marks out of 10 for Doctor Who, The Day of the Doctor?
10.
Really?
10. I mean, don't forget, if I don't like something, I criticise it. So actually saying something's good is not an often... I don't often say that, do I?
You certainly don't, and then certainly wasn't what you were echoing with respect to the drama documentary on Adventure in Time and Space.
No, that was 0 out of 10. No, actually, I'll give it 1, because the girl who played... Barbara was very good, and I quite liked the opening shot. So perhaps 2 out of 50.
Katie, would you like to bowl those last two questions down the line to the Stevensmeister?
Alan, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link bus this morning?
Oh, that's wrong. You got the line wrong. Is it link?
Oh.
I thought it was chat.
I think she was very. She was doing variations.
You can vary.
Did I say link?
I think the official line is link.
Have you had a really interesting telephonic link? You said.
Is it Canon?
Oh.
Is it Flora? have I had a various? What was it again?
We've been timey-wimey again. Carry on, Katie.
Why do you talk like that?
Has it been okay for you, Alan?
This time, Katie. Come on.
Go on.
Action.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us?
No, it's not link, is it? Is it link?
You see that button over there that says off?
It's missing, exactly. Are you coming back, Alan?
Yeah.
This is the Doctor's biggest enemy in every sense of the word. The time when it's the day of the Astley.